And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. This is the first morning show of the month of March, the first morning show for 2025's Women's History Month. We will have two interviews for you today. One, a newly recorded interview with the author of a wonderful children's book called The ABCs of Women's History. Part two will be a memorable morning show interview from 2020 with the personal trainer of the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Here's part one. It's always a pleasure to explore the beauty of a brand new, wonderful children's book. And we have an exceptionally wonderful book before us today. For the next few minutes, we're going to be exploring a brand new release from Workman Publishing called The ABCs of Women's History. And it is a lovely book that takes a young reader through the alphabet and through various concepts that are so important when it comes to changing the world for the better on behalf of women and on behalf really of all of us. And it is a beautiful book put together with author Rio Cortez and illustrator Lauren Semmer. And I am so happy to be able to speak with Lauren Semmer, who has offered up illustrations for a number of best-selling books, including a predecessor to the one we're talking about today, The ABCs of Black History. And as a Star Trek fan, my eyes lit up when I was reminded that she's responsible for the colorful and vivid illustrations for the book To Boldly Go, How Nichelle Nichols and Star Trek Helped Advance Civil Rights. She has had a very, very busy career as a highly renowned illustrator of especially children's books, but in other fields as well. And again, this latest book is titled The ABCs of Women's History. And Lauren Semmer, we welcome you to the morning show.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be here today.
Happy to be talking with you. Ahead of us talking about some of the specifics of this beautiful book, I think it would be interesting for our listeners to hear a little bit about your own really interesting life, including the childhood that you experienced in a suburb of Minneapolis as one of the only biracial students in your own school and neighborhood. Tell our listeners a little bit more about that and the way in which that experience helped shape the woman that you have become.
Their experiences, I think I look back on always while I'm working on any book I'm working on. Yes, so I grew up in a suburb of Minneapolis, Minnesota, Minnetonka, and I was, I'm a product of a Black mother, and my father is from Canada, and he's a white man, and so I was biracial. I grew up in the 80s, so there wasn't as many kids like me around, and so, you know, I had that experience of, you know, always kind of being the different kid, but I was really supported by my family, and I was always shown Black artists and Black music, and it was just a real part of my everyday life. But in the outside world, I didn't see it so much in my school. And so, fast forward, I loved art all my life, and I wanted to do something with the arts, but I wasn't quite sure what. And so I found myself, after getting out of college, I studied art history. I found myself in the fashion world, and I worked in public relations and fashion events, and, still kind of finding my way through that. Ended up in styling and art department, really loving it, and, all the while doing my illustration and my art on the side. And eventually was able to get into commercial illustration, which I do full-time now, and was once, approached to do the ABCs of Black History, which is my first book.
I want to ask you one other thing about your childhood, just because I think this ties into your the career that you are enjoying now. One of the biographies I read of you mentioned the fact that you were or are dyslexic. And so I should think that that was a challenge on a number of different fronts, but also that probably gave you, I should think, kind of an interesting relationship with books and the world of books and reading and so on. Could you just talk for a moment about that aspect of of who you were as a youngster and who you are as an adult, and what it feels like for you to play the role that you do in the crafting of books?
You know, it's such a great question. Funny enough, I've always loved books, and I've always loved storybooks, and one of my favorite classes, even as a kid growing up, was library. I loved being in the library. I loved being around books, and while I was always one of the kids in the slower reading groups, I really gravitated to all the images in books, particularly art books or just the illustrations in storybooks. You know, but I never felt like, I always felt like I wasn't doing well enough in reading. And so growing, you know, as an adult now looking back, I realized that, you know, the images meant so much to me. They still do, and it's probably why I do what I do now. You know, and I think a lot about, with my work, how to tell the story so everyone can be included, and how, you know, kids who are, depending where they are in their reading journey, can look at the images and take something away from it.
We're speaking with Lauren Semmer, who is the illustrator for a new publication from Workman called The ABCs of Women's History. And this is, in a sense, a sequel to an earlier book, The ABCs of Black History, also co-created by Rio Cortez and Lauren Semmer. One of the things that would be interesting, I think, to hear about is your working relationship with Rio Cortez in the shaping of both of these books, and kind of in general, how these two books took shape. And then we can talk maybe more specifically about some of the specific choices you end up making as the illustrator.
Sure. So I was approached by our publisher to work on illustrations for the ABCs of Black History. And I didn't know Rio at the time, and we didn't get to know each other until after the book came out. I just had her poem, and I was really excited about telling the story. You know, I loved history, I love Black culture, and I would just be able to bring both those together in a book for children was, you know, to go back to my childhood was something I didn't see in schools, and I wanted to make a book that, in a way, was for myself, for the little girl inside of me. And so Rio and I didn't get to know each other until after the book came out. Going into our new book together, you know, we talked a little bit, but we kind of let give each other space, I think, to create. And I love working with her for that reason. She gives me space to do what I'm going to do with her poetry.
So tell our listeners how this particular book, The ABCs of Women's History, is laid out. As one opens it up and pages through it, what do they find?
So you'll find on each spread a different letter, and with each letter you'll find themes of surrounding women's history. You'll find words and, you know, great vocabulary words like abundance, affirmation for A. You'll see bookish and brilliant for B. You know, C is for civil rights, E is for earth. So you'll have, on each page, you'll have a different letter, which will feature women, and sometimes we'll have women under the letters as well. And, you know, J is for justice. You have Sandra Day O'Connor, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You have, you know, all these different things. And then I kind of build out the storytelling around each letter. So while she'll, you know, have the themes and the individuals, I try to do a deeper storytelling around each letter.
Right. One of the things that I really appreciate is that in just about every single case, there's more than one word highlighted in a given letter. So let me just find a couple of examples. Like, for instance, D. D is for dreaming out loud and in color, like the artists whose work helps us discover there are new ways of seeing, more than one way to be. And I just think that's a really, really wonderful idea. When it comes to making choices then, in terms of exactly what will appear on the page visually, was that solely your responsibility, or was there some sense of collaboration, especially between the two of you, and or an editor offering thoughts as well?
Sure. So, you know, I love working on with my publisher because they give me lots of space to be creative and to do what I want, frankly. But, you know, and then Rio also has some ideas about who she wants to feature, who she has in the text. You know, I was given all, for example, for Dee, we knew we wanted to include Alma Thomas, who is a visual artist, a black visual artist, and she's actually the first graduate from Howard University's art department, which is really cool. We knew we wanted Frida Kahlo in the book. We knew we wanted Georgia O'Keeffe. But from there, I thought it would be really neat to see if we could include more women artists who were just generally underrepresented in the art world. And so from there, I was thinking, wouldn't it be fun to do a gallery where we could feature all these different women artists who've lived over time? And I mean, this isn't representative of every, you know, woman artist, but it's, you know, we got quite a few in, and have children, you know, enjoying the art and looking and exploring it. You know, we were able to get in some really fun people like Edmonia Lewis, who was a sculptor during the, a black female sculptor during the Civil War period.
Wow.
Where she used classical techniques, but featured, you know, black and indigenous people in her art. And Augusta Savage, who was another black sculptor who lived during the Harlem Renaissance. So it was really great to be able to give some of these women, like Faith Ringgold, for example, who's an amazing painter, textile artist, also a children's book author, illustrator, to give some of these women a place on the wall.
Mm. I wish this was television rather than radio or some visual medium in which people could be looking at the book as I am. The illustrations are incredibly colorful and vibrant, and but it also, for all that is sort of splashed over the pages, there's also clarity. And I suppose that's one thing that one should be thinking about when you're illustrating, especially for a children's book, is that these need to be illustrations that make sense, and for as imaginative as you might be with the illustrations, I suppose you need to be thinking about a young reader being able to make sense of them, right?
Definitely. That's a huge part of it. You know, and that's why I always, I think with my hope with my art, I try to, first of all, include children in the art, because when they see themselves in it, they see their value, and then they also see that they're a part of the story, but also to be, you know, direct with them, but without, you know, taking their intelligence for granted. A lot of the, you know, I definitely play with, for example, H is for Headliners. We have women, which is about women who worked in film. And we have women here who lived at all different times, like Edith Head, who was a costume designer in the beginning of the 20th century. We have Julie Dash, who's a director, you know, today. We have Anna May Wong, who's a silent film, you know, Asian-American silent film actress. You know, they all lived at different times, but they're within a set working together. So there's ways you can, you know, we kind of like throw away the idea of a timeline here. But, you know, you can also just show them in their world what they're doing so that children understand it, but they also see that we're all kind of working together.
Right. And I know
the greater
that,
good.
Yes, of course. And I know that, I mean, it is at least primarily Rio Cortez who's responsible for the words, but I do want to mention that I like the way in which the words, I think, work for a young reader and yet are not baby simple. I mean, we have words like intersectional and cultivate, and I appreciate that. I mean, that it is a children's book that maybe pushes the envelope ever so slightly in terms of what it asks of a young reader.
Absolutely, and what's also great about the book is if you flip through the back, we have a really wonderful back matter that Rio spent lots of time working on that features like the terms. It goes deeper with each letter. So you have the terms and the figures from each letter featured so that if you want to, you know, dive deeper or have some extra questions you want to get answers for, you can start there. You know, and what I've heard, at least with our first book, was that families enjoyed reading it together, which is really nice. There's something for the grown-up reading with the child, And there's something to talk about. I know people who will take the book and read, you know, they'll do one spread a night for a month, you know, as they go through it and talk about the people, or, you know, learn a little bit about what the words mean, or, you know, different applications for some of the ideas. So there's lots of ways to enjoy the book, I hope. And, you know, I hope that, you know, adults enjoy it as much as children.
Right.
As they read.
Absolutely. And I certainly noticed that at the back of the book, the ABCs of Women's History. I have to confess that I only noticed the background information given about the many noteworthy women who are in the book. But you're right. Some of these slightly more complex concepts are also highlighted in this same. For instance, at the very end, Z is for zeal. And the explanation is given right here. Zeal means enthusiasm or passion. History is all around us, and the ways that women have shaped history continue to affect us today. Whether you're inspired by figures from this book and beyond, or ancestors of your own, we all move forward on the wings of the past, and we each have an impact on the way history marches ahead. That really encapsulates so much of this book and what it's all about. I want to circle back to another matter. When I explored your wonderful, colorful website earlier today, one of my favorite pages actually comes under the heading of lettering. And there's splashed all over the screen are all of these wonderful examples of your lettering. And it reminds me that sometimes something we take for granted, particularly in children's books, is, and I suspect that you had a role in what the words look like. Even if Rio Cortez chose the words, you chose how these words would appear on the page. Just say a quick word about what you thought about in terms of placing the words and shaping the words on the page.
Definitely, and that's such a nice thing to notice, because it's something I think as illustrators we think a lot about, especially when we're working on children's books. But yes, definitely. You know, it's a kind of a marriage between the art and in the words. I definitely wanted to give the words, you know, a beautiful place on the page. You know, and even if you look at the letters A, B, C on each spread, I thought a little bit about with each one how I could support the concepts just with the lettering. So B, for example, is bookish. I tried to create sort of a, you know, a classic book. When you think about a lettering from a book, what a you know, serif, a little bit of a serif, a little bit what a, you know, a storybook B might look like in, you know, a book. And, you know, for example, you know, Ellis for Labor, I thought a little bit about what some of the war posters looked like in the 1940s. We have an image of women, the Rosies from the 40s, you know, working on a plane together is Ellis for Labor, the image for that. So I thought a little bit about what those posters looked like and what the lettering looked like. So, you know, we're really thinking about that always. When I do anything, I love doing lettering. It's fun. I love researching that. So, you know, that's definitely a big part of what we like to do with these books.
Well, and it just underscores the eye for detail and the meticulous care with which this book has been created. The ABCs of Women's History. It is from Workman Publishing, the words by Rio Cortez and the illustrations by Lauren Semmer. Lauren Semmer, congratulations on yet another marvelous book, and best wishes with all of your future creative endeavors. And thanks for being my guest on The Morning Show.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. For part two of today's program, you're going to be hearing an interview that was recorded and initially broadcast back in 2017. But you're going to hear it today as we re-aired the interview in the fall of 2020, not long after the death of former U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I'm Gregory Berg. As most of the world knows by now, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has passed away at the age of 87. I never had the opportunity to interview Justice Ginsburg, but if I had, it would have been probably the biggest thrill of my life. I did, however, have the special pleasure and delight of interviewing her personal trainer, a man by the name of Bryant Johnson. The occasion of our interview back in January of 2018 was the publication of a book which he wrote with the full cooperation of Justice Ginsburg, a book called The RBG Workout, in which Bryant Johnson explained in some detail the workouts which he did with Ruth Bader Ginsburg over the course of many, many years. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and then, through some technical mishap, entirely my own fault, the interview was not properly saved. I so enjoyed the interview and was so excited about sharing it, though, with the audience, that I actually had the audacity to call up Bryant Johnson to explain what I had done and to see if there was any possibility that he would be willing to give me even just a few minutes of his time in order to redo at least part of our conversation. He could not have been more gracious or more generous, and as a matter of fact, we ended up speaking longer in the redone interview than we did the first time around. And to this very day, I deeply appreciate his generosity and understanding. So, in memory of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, an extraordinary woman, here is my interview with her trainer and good friend, Bryant Johnson. I hope you enjoy it. Well, it is not every day that I get to say these words. My guest on the morning show is the certified personal trainer of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But that indeed is the case. My guest is Bryant Johnson, and he works with Justice Ginsburg on a very regular basis and has done so since 1999. The two of them first became connected after she underwent surgery for colorectal cancer. And after a battery of chemotherapy and radiation, it was Justice Ginsburg's husband who said that she should seek out a personal trainer to build back her strength. And that personal trainer turned out to be Bryant Johnson, who has actually quite a number of federal court justices, judges, attorneys, and clerks, and so on, as clients. He has recently put together a book with the blessing of Justice Ginsburg called The RBG Workout, in which we are taken through the workouts which he does with the Supreme Court Justice on a regular basis, with certain suggestions on how one might do these very exercises at home, and especially if you don't have certain exercise equipment, ways in which the exercises in effect can still be done, and lots of other wonderful little bits of information along the way. It's a great little book published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, again called The RBG Workout, and of course RBG refers to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And Bryant Johnson, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much, Greg, for having me. I really appreciate it, and thank you for your listeners also.
I think I neglected to say in the introduction that you are actually yourself a court clerk, and that is one of the reasons why it was so easy for you to connect with Justice Ginsburg and other people in the Justice Department. And we'll talk more about that relationship in just a moment. I wonder if you could say a word about where you come from originally and some of the people who have been important in your life, and maybe along the way as you're talking about your early life, maybe you can also make mention of your high school graduating class from 1982 from Rappahannock High School, because you make special mention of that in your acknowledgments as being one of the factors that really shaped who you are.
Well, first of all, Greg, I am a records manager here at the United States District Court, and I was born in New Jersey, but I was raised in a little town called Warsaw, Virginia. Raised with my grandmother, grandfather, and several aunts and uncles who lived nearby. So I was raised by a village. I talk about Rappahannock High School because it really wasn't until maybe three or four class reunions, actually two class reunions ago, I was talking, you know, to members of my class, and I was telling them how I am so appreciative to have gone to a public school in the country. And the reason why I use that is because in the country, your options are very limited. Unless your family is filthy, filthy rich and you can send your child to a very private school someplace else, everyone is going to that same public school in the country. And by going to that same public school in the country, you're exposed to many different varieties of people. Well, it wasn't until I made that statement at the class reunion that one of my classmates told me that we were the first, one of the first K through 12 integrated classes in Richmond County, Virginia. And I said, no way, you have proof of that. So he sent me a link, sent me an email, and it was. But what was fascinating to me was is that I had no idea. My entire time going through school, we weren't treated any differently. You know, if the teacher didn't like us, just didn't like us. If you did good, you did good. If you did bad, you did bad. There was no sign of any type of favoritism. And as a result of that, and then joining the military, which is probably the greatest melting pot of all time, you are around so many different types of people and different cultures and different races. And now in the military, I'm also now an equal opportunity advisor. And that job requires me to talk to soldiers who feel that they've been discriminated against because of race, religion, color, gender, national origin, and sexual preference. So all of this has come around full circle so that I am able to train and work with anybody from any walk of life. And so training Justice Ginsburg just kind of completed the circle, I guess you could say.
Explain exactly how and when, under what circumstances, physical training became so important, first of all, for you, for your own body.
Well, always in the country growing up, and at the time that I was growing up, you know, you always played outside. It was never too hot, never too cold. Matter of fact, you stayed outside just so you didn't have to do chores in the house. Played basketball, high school, ran track. Wasn't until I really joined the military. When I joined the military, and then, of course, I was in a special forces unit, and we were also jumping out of airplanes and helicopters and hitting the ground and bouncing. And so at that moment, I realized, well, if I'm going to put my body through this, I need to make sure that my body is in the best possible shape I can do. And it also helped that one of my aunts had this fantastic pound cake that I was my weakness. And so I figured if I'm going to eat the way that I want to eat, I need to make sure that I work out so that I can eat what I want when I want.
Mm-hmm. You know, it occurs to me that when you are leading the training of someone like Justice Ginsburg or other judges and attorneys and so on, you probably by and large are working with people whose professional lives are at least largely spent in very sedentary fashion behind desks or at tables. But you are not a personal trainer for ditch diggers and telephone pole climbers and so on. I mean, you are working with people who, in a sense, probably really have an acute need for what you offer them.
Yes, I agree with you. But if you really think about it, modern technology has really made it worse for us because many things that we used to do, even if you look at something as simple as a TV, I grew up, I remember we had 3-4 channels, maybe 5. Now we have 340 channels. You got a remote control. You're looking for the remote more so than just getting up and turning the channel. Simple chores that we used to do that we have to get up and move and do, you can do just sitting down and just clicking this, clicking that, and you can do everything without even moving. So as great as technology has become, it also has become our crutch. But on the flip side, technology has also made it so that you can now monitor your exercise. You can put on something like a Fitbit, for example, and let you know how many steps. You'd be like, you know what, I need to start doing more steps. So it's 6 and 1.5 dozen the other. But for the question here, yes, we are, a lot of the judges, a lot of the staff at the court, we do a lot of sitting all day. And so to engage them, to get them up, moving around, is definitely one of the most important things that I think I play in their lives.
What was it like to have this opportunity cross your path, to work with somebody of the stature of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg? I mean, how intimidating was that? And for instance, your very first meeting, what did that feel like?
The very first meeting, it was, I guess the nerves were only just getting to the Supreme Court, making sure that I was at the right location. Once I met the justice, I quickly went from in awe of the person to personal trainer, and how can I help this person help herself? That is really quickly it. I respect all of the clients that I have. I respect the title. I respect who they are. But that has nothing to do with the personal training and the reason why they called me. They called me to try to help them to help themselves. So it doesn't matter who you are, what you are, what position you hold. A plank, a crunch, a squat, a push-up, doesn't matter who you are. And so my job is to try to help them to help themselves and get past the awe of who they are. They know who they are. I respect who they are, but still treat them like a person.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Bryant Johnson, the certified personal trainer of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And we are talking about his new book called The RBG Workout, which he wrote with her blessing. As a matter of fact, there was a foreword written by Justice Ginsburg herself. At one point, you say the justice, meaning Justice Ginsburg, is a cyborg. She is a machine. What exactly do you mean by that? And to what extent is that a help? And to what extent is that maybe a risk factor when it comes to her physical regimen?
When I go cyborg, I'm actually really referring to the movie Terminator, where Arnold Schwarzenegger was this cyborg that just kept coming, you know, kept coming. Whatever you put it up against, it kept coming. And when I say this with Justice Ginsburg, her tenacity, her commitment to excellence, her commitment to doing her job, her commitment to her health now, when she can have an hour of sleep, but she will still show up. When we are scheduled to train, it's very rare that she will cancel. Matter of fact, I think I may cancel before she will cancel. And it's a commitment. She realized it early on that the exercise has played a vital part in her well-being. Her health, her bone density has increased. And so I use cyborg in a way that to let you know that she doesn't use an excuse. Whenever I say I'm going to do this, this, and this, she never says the word can't, because that's a four-letter word that I don't like any client to use with me. You can use any other word except for that word can't. It can also be her crutch, because she will show up. And sometimes I have to protect the justice from herself. So if she may have an injury, but I still want to work out. Okay, Justice, let's take it easy. Well, no, I want to work out. So now I have to be creative in how I may take it easy on her workout without her realizing that I'm taking it easy. So at that time, you know, it's her moving, driving force, but at the same time, me as a trainer, I am here to help the person help themselves, and I also sometimes have to protect them from themselves.
Right, and it's so interesting to think about how somebody doing the work that you do, how sometimes you have a dynamo like Justice Ginsburg, whom you probably have to, more than anything, sort of restrain or make sure they don't push themselves too hard. And then there, you probably have other clients where maybe it's the opposite, and you need to be cajoling them, encouraging them to do more than they realize they can. There's a lot of psychology involved in this work, isn't it?
There's more psychology than people realize. And when I've talked to people who want to become personal trainers and people who are personal trainers and they may ask my opinion, I said the biggest thing you have to realize is lots of times you are that therapy for that person. You're that sounding board. Sometimes that person may talk about things that they don't feel they want to talk about with anybody else. You have to judge that person for what that person is at that particular moment. And so what I always say is I do a AAA process with each client every time. So it's assess, adjust, and I adapt, which means when I greet them, I assess what's going on. Hey, Justice, how are you today? She may say, hey, I've only had an hour of sleep. Okay, that's my assessment. Now from assessing that, I'm going to adjust my workout according to that assessment. Then as we're going through the workout, if she's responding well or responding slow, I may have to adapt the workout according to how she's going. And that's what I do with every client. So it's not about me the client, me, the trainer, is what I tell people. It's not about you. Even though they may have come to you because you are the trainer, you got to quickly remember it's never about you. It's about them. If they didn't feel they got a good workout, then it reflects on you. Mm. If the workout was awesome, then guess what? That reflects on you also. If they get hurt, that's on you. So while they're with you, it is your responsibility to treat them like that property, that special gift that is to you, because they are, at some point, they are relinquishing some power to you.
Mm.
And you now have control over that, and they trust you to take care of them. And you have to really take that literally and seriously, and I do that with every client. It can be draining because you are putting your energy and your focus into that client for that time period. Then once you're done, you switch that off, and then you go switch to the next one.
Yeah. What is interesting, of course, with Justice Ginsburg's personal story is, as I already mentioned, your professional relationship with her as a trainer began after she was recovering from colorectal cancer surgery. But then 10 years later, she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and so suffered yet another very serious physical setback. Just talk for a moment about the kind of challenges that you faced as her trainer in trying to figure out the very best way to work with her in the wake of something that physically was so devastating. What does a trainer look for or think about in making the wisest choices for their client under those kind of difficult circumstances?
With me, it started off with the communication. Me and the Justice talked about it. Then me, I don't know everything, but I know somebody and know somebody that knows something about it. And so as a trainer, not being afraid to reach out to somebody says, hey, I have a client with this ailment. This is what's going on with this client. This is what I'm thinking. Is there anything that you can suggest or something? Because I've done that. I've done that, but I've reached out to some of my clients, reached out to some of my fellow personal trainers who may have more experience in certain areas than I have. Okay, so I know the basis that I want to do, but I may want to have a sounding board. And I actually thank one of my personal trainers in my book. I thank her because she's like a sounding board for me, because she may have dealt with clients that are more that may have more challenges than some of the clients that I have had. And so I had some ideas on what I was thinking, and I just wanted to, you know, talk it over with somebody. Says, this is what I'm thinking, and this is what my philosophy in going about this. How do you think, or what do you think? And they may give me, yeah, also consider this. Yes, maybe no, consider that. And so as a personal trainer, just being able to reach out and have a network of people that you can go to get advice from, because the end result is still, it's about the client. That's what it's about.
Of course. A couple nuts and bolts things before we finish up. One of the things you have sometimes done with Justice Ginsburg involves what you call funny counting. Can you please explain to our listeners the kind of funny counting that is sometimes part of these workouts?
It's my way of pushing my client sometimes without my client knowing. So she'll be doing something, and I see that she's doing pretty good with it, and I want to push her some more. And then I'll be like, she may be at number 8, and I'll be like, okay, I need like 4 more. Or whenever they ask me, how many more do I have? 2. Now, it takes a while for my clients to realize that every time that you ask me how many more you have to do, it's always going to be 2 more, always. And if she's tired, or if my client is not doing this form correctly, or their energy is just not there, you know what, I may just cut the number down, you know, just give me 2 more. All right, good, that's it. So it's just assessing that workout while you're doing it. You know, you in your mind, you have what you want to do, but it can't be so etched in stone that you can't move, adjust, and adapt your workout as you're going along with your client. And so that's how I do it. If she has more energy on one, I may have her do a little bit extra. Sometimes when she's in the plank position, I'll push her just to try to throw her stability off to see if she can hold it. You know, I may count funnier with, you know, my cadence may be 30, 29, 28, or I may go 30, 29, 28, 27, 26. You know, I can speed it up, slow it down, just to push them on how they're responding to the workout.
So how has she done over the course of 18 years now, for the most part, that you have worked with her. I mean, what is she like today versus that very first occasion on which you did a training workout with her?
She is committed to the exercise, but a similar question someone had asked me, and I hadn't thought about it until, you know, now. And when they asked me, they said, well, what is it that she can't do before, or if I've had to adjust early on now between these 18 years? And I thought about it, and I actually was talking to the justice about that. I said, Justice, do you realize that I train you harder now as you've gotten older than I did when we first started? And the funny thing was, the justice was thinking about it, and she didn't really give me that much of a reaction because she just wasn't in that zone yet. And I said, well, for example, Justice, remember I used to have you do crunches. I said, now I don't have you do crunches. Now I have you do planks. I have you do planks on the side, and I push on you, and I make it a little more harder for you. And she thought about it. She's like, huh. Then we used to do a move where I had her lay on her back, put her legs up, and I would, like, lay across her leg. It would be like a version of a leg press, except she would be leg pressing my weight. And I changed that to, once her bone density increased, I changed that to doing one-legged squats. Or another version would be like a pistol squat, but I'm actually holding her. She's holding my hand, and she's squatting down with one leg and standing up. And that became more challenging to her. And I told her that we changed from doing that to this. And once I gave her those two examples, she thought about it. She's like, huh. Like, and, oh, that's good. I am stronger. So, but just not realizing, we train is just like news hours on. There's very little conversation except for me saying, two more, 30 seconds, this exercise, do this. Moving here, I'll touch her hand. She knows to take it off. I move this. You know, I mimic the exercise. She goes to it. So it's almost like we are almost on autopilot. And she doesn't move any of the weights, so I control the weights. So she doesn't know what weight I put in there. I could put 40 on there today, and I could put 80 on there the next day. Has no idea. I put the weight on it, then I control the weight by holding the machine and going through it, and I can take some of the pressure on and take some and put some more pressure on. So that's how I do it with her.
Wow. We want to remind everyone that the book takes us through just about all of the various exercises that you do with Justice Ginsburg, and it's complete with illustrations in which we are, in a sense, seeing her hard at work. And there are also all kinds of points in the book in which you explain how people can do these exercises even at home without any so-called exercise equipment available at all. In other words, there is no excuse whatsoever for not making use of some of this. Of course, one of the realities of this kind of exercise training is that it's important that it is done with a trainer who is making wise choices for you specifically and your own situation. So how do you advise somebody who buys your book to make the wisest use of it at home? I mean, is it safe and advisable for them to just do the things that are pictured here? How can people use this book most effectively and safely?
Well, as with anything, if you're about to embark on exercise, it's always good to check with your doctor and make sure that you don't have any ailments. If you know a personal trainer, or if you have access to a gym, you know, you can take that book there. Some gyms, you know, they have a personal trainer that you can get, like, free for, like, the first time or the second time. Well, you know, take the book there. The book is small. It's, you know, about 5x7. It's bright yellow. It covers a lot of the basic exercises and the basic muscle groups. The great thing about exercise is that there's so much of a change that I'm just covering certain basic things, and everything is built on a foundation. Here are foundations of various exercises are in this book. You can take it. You can use machines at the gym. You can have the trainer go with you, go through it. Awesome. If you don't want to do it at a gym, you can also do it at home. All you need is a resistance tube. You can get those maybe $5, $10. I suggest getting maybe two or three small, light, medium, and heavy, and get a door anchor. And then you can mimic just about every exercise that you can use as a machine. But the biggest thing is that it's a functional book. These are functional exercises. So when I have her sit down and stand up, that's the one exercise I tell the justice. Justice, if you can't do this exercise, you're going to need a nurse 24/7. And sitting down and standing up is just like going to the bathroom, sitting down, and standing up. The moment you can't do that, you're going to need somebody to monitor you 24/7. You take it easy. Take it slow. There are options in this book. It's all about having options. If one doesn't work, then try something else.
And we should mention that, right, and it's not just adult alternatives in terms of if you aren't at an exercise club or don't have the equipment, but also easier alternatives are often presented. For instance, different kinds of push-ups. If regular push-ups would be a little bit much for you, there are easier alternatives that might make more sense. It really does give one a lot to think about, and of course, the most important thing is to get started, do something. And one way to begin is by taking this wonderful book in hand called The RBG Workout. And it's published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and the author, Bryant Johnson. Bryant Johnson, thank you so much for joining me today on The Morning Show. I really enjoyed talking with you, and I really enjoyed looking at your book. It has been an inspiration to me, and I hope it will be for many, many people. And best wishes to you and to Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Greg, thank you so much, and thank you for your listeners. I appreciate it. Also, if you're looking to get the book or any other questions, you can go to the website, and that's easy. It's www.rbgworkout.com.
Very good. Once again, the preceding Morning Show interview was broadcast from the Morning Show archives. Tomorrow on the Morning Show, I'll be welcoming back into our studios Dr. Art Sear, a member of the faculty at Carthage College. And Professor Sear essentially joins us once a month to talk about various issues and current events. We will be talking about a number of different things tomorrow, including the eventful first 6 weeks of President Trump's second term. Wednesday on the Morning Show, an exciting day as we celebrate the 60th anniversary of the Racine Literacy Council. Joining me into the studio will be, first of all, Laura Sumner Kuhn, who is the current executive director of the Racine Literacy Council. Also with us will be Ann Zog, who is one of the many capable and committed volunteer tutors at the Racine Literacy Guild. And also joining us will be a gentleman by the name of Victor Mejia. He is a grateful recipient of the services of the Racine Literacy Council. He and his wife and daughter have participated in a rather new offering there, the Family Literacy Program. And we will find out about the difference that that has made in his life and his family's life. On Thursday, a very important topic, the prevalence of scams and frauds that are perpetrated over the internet. We're going to be talking with three members of the Kenosha Police Department who are hard at work on this issue, Detectives Brad Buchanan and Ryan Pfeiffer and Crime Prevention Officer John Wenberg. They make presentations all around town on how people can safeguard themselves against becoming victims of this kind of crime. So we'll have that conversation for you on Thursday. And on Friday, in celebration of flexibility, we'll be hearing a conversation I recorded a couple of weeks ago with Dr. Ross White, author of The Tree That Bends, How a Flexible Mind Can Help You Thrive. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Today is going to be mostly cloudy, and there'll be a slight chance of a light rain shower here and there. We're headed for a high today of 43 degrees. Cloudy skies overnight, and actually rain is likely tonight with an overnight low of 38. And generally speaking, rainy conditions over the next several days, and we should see daytime highs ranging from the upper 40s to the low 50s. We should see some sunshine, actually, by Thursday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine, Elk.